There we are. Right, good morning, everyone. Again, welcome to you if you're a visitor here. It's lovely to have you here. I know there are a few in the room. Welcome to you. Before I start with today's theme, just to say it's been a while since we've run an Alpha course in this church, but there's one coming up in mid-March. Are you wanting to join the course, John? Or? Okay. Sorry, that was a joke. Yeah. So the Alpha course starting in mid-March, and if you're not familiar with what it is, it's a course about the foundations of the Christian faith, the basics, if you like. And so if you're a new Christian, or if you're someone who's wanting to explore the Christian faith, just to see what it's about, then this is a really good way to do it. Because on Sundays, by and large, you have to listen to what's been said from the front. But at the Alpha course, you can come with your questions. We have lovely discussion around tables, around a hot meal, in fact. It's a very helpful way of exploring the Christian faith. So if you want to reserve a place on that course, let me know. And if you've got friends that you'd like to invite, please do that. So I was doing my Bible readings this week, and on Friday, 2 days ago, I thought better to do my personal devotion than start preparing the sermon. So I did that, and I came across these verses in Psalm 145, which are great. The Lord is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and rich in love. The Lord is good to all. He has compassion on all he has made. You recognize those words. We sing them in a song. But that was a lovely lead-in to me on Friday for preparing for today's theme, because today our theme is anger, okay? Anger and how we should deal with it. Are you a person that gets angry? Do you get angry? Well, do you? I thought it'd be fun to find out what makes you angry. So, Dave, would you oblige and run around with a microphone?
Oh, well.
Yes. Oh, you got something on your mind. So let's just have a few people. Now, don't be rude, okay? Let's not offend anyone in the room. So be careful what you say. But let's just find out some of the things that might make it. See, you're already enjoying this. Why is it? Anyway, go on. Anyone, what makes you angry? Oh, got one at the back there. Christian?
Oh.
What was that?
My kids.
Kids.
Yeah.
Kids, children.
Very honest. When you're in the throes of renewing your passport and they ask for petty, silly little things.
Share that with you, Paul.
People not indicating.
Oh. Watch out, it's Dave's wife.
yeah, Dave. No, I get really angry when I see the way women are treated around the world in various places.
Yeah.
Tailgating drivers.
Must be more over this side.
This side's much more peaceable.
I don't actually get angry, I just get annoyed and niggled and grumpy. But what does it to me is when things don't happen when I expect or think they should do.
Little message from the treasurer there to the rest of us.
I get angry when I'm trying to have a conversation with someone on their phone.
Yes.
People who throw litter out of car windows.
Well, maybe it's the last one. Yeah.
I am angry about the trade deals internationally that impact poor families and poor people across the world.
Yeah. Good. Did you have one, Dave?
I was thinking about it.
Oh, okay. Well, you're a very irritable bunch of people today. I had a little think, and what's on my anger list, and one thing I noticed has gone off my anger list is computers. Because 10 years ago, that used to get my blood boiling, but they just don't seem to break down anymore. Is that just me?
Just me.
James Tunnicliffe built my computer. It's very fast and very reliable, and I'm extremely grateful. But there are two things that are still on my list. inconsiderate driving. Sorry for white van drivers here, but just 2 weeks ago, I was picking up Petra and Tia after youth, and we were out on the street, and I heard this car foot to the floor from probably the car park all the way down the street, accelerating, and I just couldn't believe it. Probably doing about 45, heading up for 50. I just threw my arms in the air as he passed, you know, screeching of brakes. His car slammed into reverse, screeching back up to me, and the translation of what he said was basically, "What's your problem?" So I said it'd be ever so lovely if he could not speed when our children are leaving the church. He took it okay, sort of. But anyway, so driving. And the other one is children, where we started. This is obviously specific to my girls, but I just want to say Petra and Tia are not naughty than any other children in the church, I think. But when they were younger, we used to send them to the naughty step. Anyone do the naughty step? Time out, sorry. On the step. But yeah, okay, time out. But there were occasions when I didn't send them there, I took them there. And their feet didn't touch the ground as they went. And their feet were going like this. They were joking about this even last week. And they have a theme song for those moments, which is a song, Walking in the Air. Anger is something that's common to all of us. We all get angry about different things. So we're all in the same boat, I hope. But anger, as we know, isn't just emotional. It's also a very physical thing that happens within us. So if the medics and nurses here can bear with me talking about physiology for a moment, hopefully I get this right. What happens to us when we get angry? Well, we have increased levels of adrenaline and noradrenaline. And basically, the hormones are neurotransmitters. Someone tell me? Oh, you don't know? Okay. Hormones, I believe. These cause a cascade of events through the body that prepare us for an absolute sort of, we're supercharged. We have this burst of energy that can last for several minutes, in fact. We breathe faster to get more oxygen. Our heart rate goes up. Our blood pressure increases. There's more blood flow to the muscles, especially the arms and the legs, for obvious reason, to prepare you for action. Your face can change. You get flushed. Your brow knits together, you get a clenched jaw, your nostrils flare, maybe. narrowed focus of attention. Have you noticed when you get angry that the surroundings just sort of melt away and all you see is this person or this thing that is causing this response? It's very noticeable. It you get tunnel vision and actually that's your brain focusing on the threat or whatever. That's why when you see people fighting, they destroy everything around them because they're not aware of what's around them. They just focus on this thing in front of them. And you shake. And you don't shake because you're afraid. You might do a little bit, but the shaking is because you are burning so much glucose when you're angry that your pancreas can't keep up. And so you're actually struggling with sugar depletion. Anyway, so there's... Any of the medics, have I got any of that wrong? No? Okay, we're good to go. Right. The point I'm making is anger is a very powerful emotion. It changes you from somebody lovely like that into that. Or, to bring it up to date, from that into that. Anyway. So, anger prepares us for action. One of the big problems with anger is what happens in our brains, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But first, let's see what Jesus has to say about anger in today's passage. So we're looking at Matthew 5. We're doing the Sermon on the Mount, as the banners tell us. So let's have a look then at Matthew 5, here, verses 21 to 22a. You've heard that it was said to the people long ago, "You shall not murder," and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. So Jesus begins here, you've heard that it was said. And actually in this chapter, it's a block of teaching where six times Jesus begins by saying, "You have heard that it was said, but I say to you." And in each occasion, he's taking something from the Old Testament or something from the tradition of the Jewish elders, and then he is amplifying that or deepening it. And so he says here, you've heard that it was said, you shall not murder. Where's that from? Ten Commandments. Anyone know which one it is? It's the sixth one. It is Exodus 20. It's the sixth commandment. Yeah, thou shalt not murder. Now, Jesus isn't contradicting that law here. He says here, if you murder someone, you'll be subject to judgment. That's what the Old Testament says. But Jesus says, if you're angry with someone, you'll be subject to judgment. Now, if you think about it, the law courts in our land, they judge us on the basis of our actions, don't they? You can be sent to jail for killing someone, but you can't be sent to jail for wishing someone was dead. But here, what Jesus does is he lifts the bar and he says, look, this is the letter of the law, but here's the heart and the spirit of the law. Because it's not just about your action, it's about your attitude. It's not just about what you do, it's about what you think and what you feel. Because actually those things are at the root of these actions anyway. So he lifts the bar. And he said, watch your anger. You're accountable to God for that. And then Jesus says in verse 22b, again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, Raca, is answerable to the court, and anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Now, strong words. Once more here, Jesus sets up a contrast. He said, if someone calls someone Raca, they'll be answerable to court. In his day, the court in the village council. Now, Raca means nothing to us, does it? But it's an Aramaic word, and it basically means numbskull or imbecile. Basically fool, okay? So Jesus is saying here, actually, verbal, how you speak verbally is important. And that is true in the law of our land. You know, we do have to be careful how we speak to people. You know, we can be guilty of crimes of hatred if we speak inappropriately on, gender lines, sexual lines, religious lines. There's many ways in which we can be guilty of a hate crime by what we speak and what we say. But then Jesus takes this further and he says, anyone who says you fool will be in danger of the fire of hell. Now, the contrast here is not between the word Raca and the word fool. Jesus isn't saying Raca is serious, but fool is way more serious, because actually the word fool in Greek is the word moros, where we get the word moron from. And Raca and fool here mean the same thing. It's just one is in Aramaic and the other one is in Greek. It's the same meaning. So the contrast isn't between these words. The contrast Jesus is setting up is saying, In the culture at the moment, if you speak badly to someone, you can be taken to court. But actually, there is a divine justice you need to be aware of too, that God cares, God really cares about the way that we speak to others. He really cares. And Jesus puts this in very strong terms, doesn't he? Jesus says that we'll be in danger of the fire of hell. Now, the word hell there is, it's the word Gehenna. Gehenna was a rubbish dump outside Jerusalem. It's where everyone brought all their rubbish and it was burnt. And it was constantly on fire, constantly burning, because people were constantly bringing rubbish. So there's a warning here, Jesus says. That rubbish dump was a place of destruction. And Jesus is saying, just be careful, because there is a danger here for us. Strong stuff. Right, let's have a think then how we deal with anger. And I think the fundamental thing that we need to get across this morning, or I do, is let's try to be people who are slow in becoming angry. I want to go back to physiology for a moment. There is a brain, and I've put an arrow there next to the amygdala. And the amygdala is the part of the brain that responds to threat. It's part of the lower brain region, and it's very good. In fact, it's very fast. And you can imagine sometimes when we face threats to our survival even, you have to act quickly. You haven't got time for sitting down and drawing up a committee and so what should we do here? You need to be fast in dealing with a threat. So the amygdala serves a great purpose. It's so fast. But the problem is, and the amygdala is the thing that sends out these signals, which then cause this huge cascade of physiological effects in the body, this supercharged feeling we get. Problem is, it's a bit too good. It's too good in the sense your frontal cortex there, which is about here, which is responsible for careful thought and reasoning and judgment, it hasn't got time to catch up with the amygdala. So in that sense, anger is unthinking because it's quick, it's fast. So we need to be aware of how our brains work. They work that way for a reason and it's helpful, but it can be dangerous for us too. This is why people talk about crimes of passion. And actually, sometimes the courts look a little bit more leniently on crimes of passion, I think. And people say, I don't know what came over me. It wasn't me doing it, and all that sort of thing. Because when they sit down and their frontal cortex gets into action, they think about what they've just done, they realize, oh my word, why did I do that? But what was happening, they were being driven by this impulse from another part of the brain that says, you've got to jump into action. So, this is the wisdom behind counting to 10, isn't it? Do you count to 10, anyone? Or 20? I've read that Julius Caesar used to recite the whole Roman alphabet when he got angry before he would speak. Not bad for a Roman emperor, I thought, really. So how do we deal with anger then? First of all, we need to love people. We need to love people. So a few more words from Matthew 5 here, verse 43 onwards. You've heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. There's nothing amazing about loving your friends. Jesus is quite clear here, that's the norm. Everyone in the world is loving their friends, you know, well, on a good day when they're treating us as they should. We love our friends. It's not distinctively Christian, but Jesus brings a whole nother level here. He says, actually, you need to love your enemies. Wow. And that takes something, doesn't it? I mean, we have often a lot of love in our hearts, but do we have the love within us to actually extend that love to our enemies? That is the mark, I think, of God's love really doing a work within us. And it's very effective. Someone said we destroy our enemies when we make them our friends. Even if they won't be a friend to us, we can have an attitude of love to them. And that is a very transformative thing in a situation. So how do we deal with anger? Love people. Secondly, pray for people. Jesus says here, the highlighted text, pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. So we want to be children of our Father in heaven. How do we see that? What's the sign and the mark of that? Jesus says, if you're going to be like my Father, you're going to be praying for those. You're going to be praying even for the people who oppose you the most. Do you do that? Do you pray for the people? I have found when people annoy me, obviously not here. Nobody annoys me here. But when... we're doing Thou Shalt Not Lie soon, don't worry. When people have annoyed me in the past, in previous fellowships and so on, I have found that there is no quicker way of changing my attitude to that person than prayer. It really does change. For me, I don't know if it's just me, it changes my attitude instantaneously. Because suddenly, this person you've objectified as the epitome of all evil or whatever, you are now praying for good. and you're praying for God's blessing on them. You might also pray for a bit of transformation, but you're praying for good for them, and that just changes. It's like letting go of something and giving it to God and saying, God, I put them in your hands. Bless them. So pray for people. Thirdly, offer peace. So a few verses here. First of all, from Proverbs 29, a fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. James 1, my dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. For man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. And then verses from today's passage. You've heard that it was said, Jesus says, eye for eye and tooth for tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. In secondary school, I led my school Christian Union during the sixth form for 2 years. And my friends didn't know the Bible at all, but they all knew this verse. And quite a few times they come up to me and say, Chris, you're a Christian, and the Bible says, if I slap you on your cheek, then you have to turn it and I can slap you on the other one. So they used to try this, and I hit them back, of course. Just sorry, I've been reading a lot of the Old Testament, you know, recently. There's a principle here of the way we react to people. There is aggression, as we know, builds, doesn't it? It escalates. If you get into an argument with someone, it can very easily get out of control. And in the end, you're doing things you wish you weren't doing. That's what aggression does. Actually, I want to suggest to you it takes more strength to not retaliate. It takes more strength. You know, gentleness, we've talked about this before here. Gentleness might seem a bit wishy-washy, but gentleness is strength under control. Nobody looks at an ant and says, oh, that's a very gentle ant. You might look at an elephant, though, and say, oh, that elephant's ever so gentle, because it's strong, but that strength is under control. And there's something for us here. We should live as gentle people. It takes strength not to rise to the other person, not to retaliate. But it's very effective. In fact, you could argue that a lot of the success of the American Civil Rights Movement and the movement for independence in India was based on principles of non-retaliation and non-violent non-cooperation. But they refused to retaliate, and it was very effective. So there is a principle here of offering peace, not aggression. Fourthly, seek reconciliation. Again, from our passage. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, then come and offer your gift. So this is in the context of someone going to the temple to offer, to give an offering. The parallel to us would be like coming to church on a Sunday morning. And Jesus says, you remember someone has something against you. And when I read that, I thought, that's the wrong way around. Shouldn't Jesus say, if you've got something against someone else? But it's not that way around. So, you know, sometimes people have got something against us, and it's not our fault. Sometimes it is our fault. But I think what Jesus is saying, either way, the onus is on us, where possible, to seek reconciliation with others. We have a responsibility to try to mend broken friendships. I'm sure you recognize this painting by Leonardo da Vinci, The Last Supper. And, when he was painting this, he got into a furious argument with someone and lashed out at this person. And then he returned to the painting, and he was in the middle of painting the face of Christ. And he couldn't do it. So he had to go, put down his paintbrush, go and find that friend and apologize to them. And then he could come and finish painting the face of Christ. And it reminds me of what Jesus is saying here. You know, if we want to come and meet face to face with God in a service of worship, we need to sometimes meet face to face with each other first. And as far as we're able, to seek reconciliation with those who have wronged us or those who we have wronged. Now, that's not always possible. I I like the practical nature of Romans 12, verse 18. It says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Okay. Fifthly, get help. If you have a real problem, if you need some anger management, get help. Get some counseling. You know, not all anger is episodic. Some anger is episodic. It just happens in the moment. But sometimes anger becomes a trait. It becomes a dispositional. It's part of our character. Becomes part of who we are. And that can be a problem. You know, it may be that some of us struggle with aggressive anger. You know, you are quick on the roads to tailgate people. Or, you know, you go home and kick the cat. Or you slam doors. Or you're very quick to just fly off the handle. You know, and that, I understand that. I can be like that too. But this aggressive anger is unhelpful. Some of us might struggle with passive anger. Where, you know, we're the passive-aggressive types. So our anger comes out in criticism and bitterness and sarcasm. Even emotional withdrawal from other people. And some of us may even struggle with suppressed anger, where, you know, we feel like we're not good at talking to people when they upset us, and we hold it all in, and we're like that sort of, you know, fizzy bottle that's just getting shaken and shaken, and eventually it's just going to explode. You know, there are different ways, different forms that anger can take and express itself. But whatever it is, if anger is a feature of your life, if you feel it's become part of who I am, I would suggest you get help, professional help, you know, and come and talk to us. We can arrange for counselors and so on who will help you through that. Finally, get angry about the right things. I think our problem is perhaps not that we get angry, but that so often our anger is about the wrong things and for the wrong reasons. I struggle most with anger when I know I'm in the right. When I know my anger is justified. If someone cuts me up on the road, I'm angry and I feel I'm justified in my anger because they have made a mistake. Even in that situation, when you think about it, our anger is very self-orientated, isn't it? It is. It's quite selfish. I wonder whether we are getting angry about the wrong things. Jesus got angry in the Gospels, but he got angry when he saw people mistreating other people and when he saw people maligning God or misrepresenting God. That's what made Jesus angry. His anger was righteous. Think of Jesus when he cleansed the temple. He made that whip, didn't he? And he turned over the tables of the money changers. It was a situation of righteous anger, the zeal of the Lord. But it was for the right things. It was for the honor of God. So there is a place for righteous anger. And so the question I want to leave us with this morning is, what are we getting angry about? We heard a few of those trade laws. What about those? You know, we are so often the beneficiaries of unjust trade laws. Women's rights around the world, massive issue, even today, and threatens to be for decades to come in all likelihood. People dying in the Mediterranean Sea, 6 a day on average at the moment, trying to make that crossing. You know, there are many things which should be making us angry. And yet, it's so easy to get caught up in my little world. Oh, that white van, it's terrible. Let's get angry about the right things. I don't mean aggressive anger. I mean, let's get stirred up, because that's what's going to move us, isn't it, from apathy to action. So let's be angry about the right things. I'm just going to take a moment now before we move into communion and just leave these 6 points on the screen, and let's take a moment of silence. You might want to think about how you deal with anger, and it could be that one or two of these things just jump out at you and you say, actually, that's what I need to pray for this person in the office. Pray for my child, whoever it might be. I need to pray for them. I need to love them and offer peace. Just let's take a moment in silence. wonder if the band could come up. The other band. Going to sing a song reminding us of the God that we worship. The Lord is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and rich in love. And the Lord is good to all. He has compassion on all that he has made. Let's stay seated as we sing this together.